This is Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Welcome, everybody. It's Bob, Dave, and Moore here on 710 ESPN Seattle. Wednesday edition of the program coming up. We'll talk a lot of football, college and pro. John Clayton will be with us at 4 o'clock, as he normally is. Then at 5 o'clock, our buddy Brady Henderson from ESPN.com, who covers the Seahawks for ESPN.com, will be a guest of the show as well. How are you guys doing?
Good. How are you doing, Bob?
I'm good, man. Is Jim there?
Yeah, I'm doing great, Bob. Good to hear your voice.
Good to hear yours, too, Jim.
You guys miss each other or something?
Oh, yeah. So much, yeah.
I'm just fired up for the show, as usual, Bob and Dave. Yeah.
Full of passion. Full of passion, as Jim normally is.
I know. I'm like Pete Carroll.
Yes, you are. Always sunny, optimistic, just making the best of a bad situation, never looking at the dark side, always the bright side, and it's an opportunity to compete, by God.
That's right. Honestly, the only thing I share in common with Pete Carroll is the hair. That's it.
The hair color?
Yeah, just the hair color. Yeah, that's it. I still want to know why he never wears hats. I want to ask him that question.
Because he's got a fine head of hair. Why do you want to cover that?
Great head of hair. Yeah.
He never wears hats, ever.
Well, he's got great hair.
I know he does.
Wouldn't he look? He'd look goofy in a hat, wouldn't he?
Have we seen him? We've seen him in a hat before.
Well, when it's cold, he'll wear a stocking cap. But no, he doesn't wear a baseball hat or a visor or anything.
Man, I hope I have that much hair on my head when I'm almost 70. He's 69, right? Isn't he 69 years old? Man,
sure is.
He's got a luscious head of hair. All right. Yeah. We'll fawn over Pete's hair for the next 10 minutes and make everybody really uncomfortable.
This is great sports radio right now.
Text in if you like Pete's hair. 710-710. No, we want to get to some things going on in the world of college football, because there is a lot happening between the Pac-12 players group. They're demanding the changes we touched on. There's the whole situation with Colorado State and their players, accusations of neglect in regards to the protocol. Some players saying it's happening, some saying it's not. The Big Ten forming a unity group, and then UConn just cancels their whole season. So my level of optimism. We've talked about this, before the baseball season started, and we've talked about it in regards to the NFL. Before we get into some of these sound bites I want to play from Keyshawn Johnson and Paul Feinbaum and Dallas Hobbs, where's your level of optimism that there's going to be a college football season on a scale of 1 to 10?
Oh, I would say a 3, because I think once they start – Clayton has talked about this, that 5% is the number he came up with are probably going to test positive, and he had a certain number of players. But I just think that the second that, somebody gets really seriously sick – and, possibly passes away because of coronavirus, it would be all over the news, and people wouldn't be able to handle it and say, shut it down. So, that could happen. I mean, there's lots of college football players, right? So, I mean, if that happened and there was maybe one or two, I don't think anybody has, I don't think we have tolerance for that anymore. It used to be that, it was a statistic, that you would read about, but now it's we know who these people are, whether they're on Twitter or whatever. And so I just think that for that reason, I feel like it's not going to happen. I think it's going to be a lot harder to control the kids too, college players, than it is with the NBA. They have a deep pockets and they can, do the bubble thing, but I just don't think that you can get that done with college football.
Well, yeah, and look how hard it's been for baseball, the non-contact sport of baseball, and all the struggles they've had with the Marlins and the Cardinals and having to cancel games, postpone them, seven-inning doubleheaders. I shouldn't say I hate to be skeptical, because I'm always skeptical, so it's just who I am. But, yeah, I'd say I'm a 1 or a 2 on the college football season this year, especially in light of the new developments today. But I still don't understand why they didn't just push it back and say, we're gonna punt for the next few months, and we're going to give it a try in January. We know it's an oddball deal, but we want to avoid this second wave. We're trying to find out more about it, and yet they're still trying to get it going. It's just like the NFL. I'm about a one or a two on the NFL season, too. I think there's going to be more stories coming about COVID-19, positive tests, and I just highly doubt that you're going to get a full NFL season and highly doubt that it's going to start on time.
Yeah, I'm much more optimistic when it comes to the NFL. They feel like, as much as we've criticized some of the lack of protocol and you know, the NBA and the NHL seem to be the model right now, and understanding they're in a different situation with fewer players on an NBA roster, what, you know, a bubble situation for the NFL is much tougher. I don't think it's impossible. I think the Saints are setting an example. As far as college football, man, it just seems like it's kind of everybody's left to their own devices to certain extents. I mean, you got some calling off their season. Some are going to play conference only. Some are going to do this. Some are going to do that. It just feels like it's so scattershot that there's not one unified voice or one unified message. Here's how it's going to work. Here are the precautions. Here are the protocols. That doesn't exist in college football right now. And Dallas Hobbs, from you're familiar with him, Jim, Washington State defensive lineman, says the biggest concern is making sure there's a set standard for health and safety protocols across the Pac-12.
Really, our main focus is that COVID. You know, we want the enforced health and safety standards, just because it's not uniform to all universities around the Pac-12. You know, it's not enforced correctly all around. So we just kind of want that to be the main concern, and everything else, like I said, will fall in behind.
And I'm with him on that. And he just touched on what I was saying around just college football as a whole. He's isolating it to just the Pac-12. It's not even uniform in the Pac-12. So it just feels like they're way behind in setting a standard and setting guidelines, whether we're talking about the Pac-12 specifically or all of college football or the Big Ten versus the Big Two. You know, it feels so scattershot. That's what leads to my pessimism about the college football season.
Well, and the one word he used there was correctly. Well, I don't know that anybody actually has it down of what is the absolute best way to handle that. You know, I know, like with the Seahawks, you know, I have to go down and get tested, and you know, there's two testing dates, and you know, you're supposed to download an app, and there's something that has to do with Clear, which is like the way of organizing the testing, you know, Clear, like when you go through the airport,
mm-hmm.
Download an app there, and then you have to get the brain swab and just all, you know. So
the brain swab, huh?
Yeah, that's what somebody was telling me. Like, yeah, I think it touches your brain. I'm like, it does not. It touches way up in your sinuses.
It's hitting your frontal lobe.
Yeah, but yeah, never mind. I was going to make a joke about not being, there wasn't a brain there. Yeah. It was just a hollow. Then I thought about Jim. Then I thought, no, I should make the joke about myself anyway.
Hey, you're starting to sound like me, Dave.
I know,
to yourself.
Exactly. All right, here I am having a whole conversation in my head. But
your internal debate is becoming external, like Jim.
Yeah. That's when you know you're in trouble, is when you start arguing with yourself. That's bad. That's a bad sign. And then you say, I'm surprised I thought that. But anyway. You see what the Seahawks are doing. The NFL, I feel like that, you know, they have deeper pockets. They're able to there's more at stake, you know, money-wise. Although, you know, I was reading John Wilner, and, you know, some of these schools like Oregon State, like 80% of their budget comes from football as far as their athletic department goes. You know, so just, and I think Colorado, they said they're going to lose like $20 million in ticket sales. That's what they got last year anyway. And then $30 million for the media rights. I mean, there's a lot of money in college football too, certainly. But I feel like the NFL, you know, they're going to take it to the next level. Like, it's going to be like as good as you can get testing anywhere in the country right now. And, you know, I remember we kind of debated as to whether or not, you know, that was cool that, you know, they got the tests and normal people can't get it and everything. But it looks like the NFL is not sparing any, you know, expense. And I'm not sure about the Pac-12 and how organized they are. And, you know, the big D tackle there said correctly. And, you know, I guess we don't really know what is the absolute best way. But, you know, as long as you're trying, that's for sure. And that's the thing with the Seahawks. I mean, you can't say if it shuts down, you can't say that they weren't trying, man, because, you know, they're going to great lengths too. You know, we talk about the buzzer thing where you're not supposed to stand around people more than, you know, 10 minutes. So they certainly are. They're certainly trying. You just don't really get that sense from, you know, college football, because we're not seeing, you know, it seems like everybody's kind of doing their own thing.
Yeah, and Jim, it feels like people, I've heard some people that were critical of the NBA, oh, they're overdoing it. I'd much rather you err on the side of caution, that you overdo it than underdo it, and have stops and starts and, you know, these moments of, well, do we continue? Can we continue? I mean, they're not leaving anything to chance in the NBA and the NHL for that matter. Wouldn't that make sense for college football and pro football? I know you're dealing with a different union, and you've got to negotiate. You got to do these things at the pro level. But as far as college football goes, just a uniform policy that if it feels like it's overdone, so what? Tough it out. Deal with the protocols, but make it uniform so everybody's on the same page.
Okay, well, yeah, I'm with you on that, but what would the protocols be? Would they be realistic? Could they have enough in those protocols to allow a season without someone? You know, it's just, the thing is, it's like Michael Bradley talked about it yesterday, about the exponential part of this. It's just like if one guy goes to a strip club, or one guy goes to a restaurant and then comes back, and then playing a contact sport like football, and you know, the sweating, the breathing, the everything that's going on out there. I just can't imagine this. And I want it to happen. I love the NFL. I love college football, the Pac-12, the Cougs, all of that. I want it as in the worst way. But I just, boy, more and more, Bob, I just look at this UConn athletic director today just saying, and I thought, when I first heard about UConn being the first FBS team to say we're not going to play this season, I thought, oh, they must be having some problems back there, like Rutgers, where they had 28 players test positive. Maybe it's the same at UConn. They haven't had a player test positive, anyone in the organization there, the football team anyway, that has tested positive since early July. And so when the AD comes out and says, the safety challenges place our football students at an unacceptable level of risk, you sit there and you go, well, okay, that guy seems to be talking some sense here, and yet I understand there's money involved, and yet we're talking about kids. You know, it's one thing with NFL players. They're grown adults. They're grown men. But we're talking about kids, and we all know what it was like when we were in our teens and on a college campus, the parties that you go to. I think that's what happened at Rutgers, which increased the number of cases there. So it just seems unreasonable to think that they can pull this off.
Well, and speaking of UConn, here's Paul Feinbaum, one of Yogi Roth's favorite people in the world. He thinks the UConn decision will open the door for other schools to opt out.
What UConn is going to do, it's going to tell other programs it's okay to fold the tent, whether they're in as bad a shape as UConn or not. We will be talking about more programs saying, you know what, I can't go with my conference. I'm in a tough part of the country. And what's interesting is that UConn, the state of Connecticut, as you all of you know, has come out of the worst of it. It's not even a hot spot anymore, like Florida, Texas, and many other places. So this is a unique decision. It's not going to be a leading indicator that tomorrow everyone else throws up their hands. But this story will be continued over and over again as we work our way to September.
I don't know if I agree with him that UConn opting out would then make some other school, some other institution feel more comfortable. I just don't know that they've got the standing, if you will. If it were Michigan, if it were Ohio State, if it were, you know, one of these program, Alabama, right? You know, the elite. If one of them said, all right, we're cashing it in this season, I might buy that. UConn, I don't think, has that impact.
Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, how old is the UConn football program? I want to say it's like within our lifetime, but I thought they didn't have football there for a while. But anyway, you're right, Bob. I mean, if it was Alabama, oh my gosh, LSU, I mean, a program like that, then that would have some kind of an effect. I'm not so sure about UConn, but is anybody considered that, like, what if we're in the same situation next year at this time? I mean, it could. I had a doctor say this could, you know, go two and a half years.
Yeah, you know, we all scoffed when we heard, you know, somebody, I can't remember who told us 18 months when this first started, that it could go that long. And we're all like, come on. And now that doesn't seem unrealistic at all. Now, hopefully there'll be a vaccine in that time and we won't be having this conversation. Fingers crossed, toes crossed. But you're right, Dave. I mean, there's no certainty of what May happen next year.
Yeah, no, it's that's why everything's so up in the air. It's just it's amazing to me that you just, you know, you've got all these organizations, the NFL, college football, everybody trying to just full speed ahead. I know they're proceeding with caution, but are they proceeding with enough caution? And there are so many things that come out all the time, every day. There'll be something new tomorrow, and somebody will be opting out. There'll be another college that'll be thinking, man, look what UConn did. And in spite of what you guys are saying, I suppose if it's a bigger school, you'd get more of an argument from another school for pulling out. But how about this news about the Pac-12 loan that they're considering getting? John Wilner, the San Jose Mercury News, reporting that they're looking at this loan for up to $1 billion in case they don't play a season this year to help out athletic departments that are missing out on the media rights and the ticket sales, about $50 million a year for each school. And so they're getting this loan, $83 million for each school at 3.75% rate over the next 10 years. And they feel like the Pac-12 is in a position to be able to pay that off because of what they're making from Fox and ESPN in the TV deal over the next 4 years. But the point is they're putting a plan in place in case the season isn't played. So they're definitely considering that possibility.
Yeah, it's I mean, there are a lot of things to unfold with all of this. And, you know, just I think this is the tip of the iceberg in terms of, you know, random players, a couple of Cougs saying I'm not playing for various reasons, schools shutting down the whole football program like UConn. Keyshawn Johnson said players are finally starting to call out coaches that might not have player safety as their main priority. We talked about the Colorado State story yesterday. I think this is in reference to some of that.
Players now are saying, well, wait a minute, hold on. UCLA and Chip Kelly, these student athletes at UCLA said, no, man, hold on. I need a third party to look at you because I can't trust you. You got a background of garbage, and we know it, and we can't trust you because all you want to do is try to win football games. And I've said this to many people over the last several months is unless you have a DR, an MD, a PhD in front of your name, or you in some major science building, don't tell me anything about COVID.
You got a background of garbage. Wow.
Well, what's he talking about? The coaching staff?
He's talking about Chip Kelly. Remember the story about the players saying, you know, they didn't trust his advice on, yeah, you know, protocol, and they wanted an outside party to – they didn't trust him. I mean, which was obviously a very damning statement by the football team, by his players. They don't trust the guy. But, yeah, unless you got a DR, an MD in front of your name, don't tell me anything about it.
Well, and even then, you know, like I said, I talked to a doctor. He was suggesting the two and a half year, like the Spanish flu, you know, and then you talk to other doctors and they'll say something different. I mean, nobody really knows for sure. And that's why, you know, earlier when Dobbs said, you know, correctly, well, there's really no correct way right now that's established so that we know, you know, this is the best thing that you can do for, you know, we're still going, okay, wash your hands, you know, socially distance. Now there's this buzzer thing. So, yeah, it's a tough one because you have different doctors saying different things. And, you know, it's – and again, you know, the percentages may be, you know, the same as, like, influenza deaths. But the thing is it spreads much more rapidly. And, you know, so now it's – and then also, like I said, if somebody who's like a big name or something gets something really serious, I mean, that's just going to be – that's going to stand out. And it's going to make people much more fearful and not want to go, you know, go mm-hmm. back into the water.
Well, and I think you and I talked about this, Dave, is that it's not just survive or not survive. There's a middle area that's really, really ugly for a lot of people that do survive, but – they have heart issues, they've got lung issues, they've got damage to their organs. I mean, yeah, they survived, so they're in that category of, hey, they're fine, they got past it. No, there's a lot of lingering effects that the regular influenza strain doesn't have on the human yeah. body. So there it is decidedly different as much as people want to prop up these stats. Well, it's like the flu. Well, actually, it's not. Actually, it's not. And there is a middle area where there's a lot of damage being done to people, young and old.
Yeah, well, and I don't know, I have any idea what those percentages are of those people getting it, but the thing is that you get now is you get the ones and two stories, you know, so it's hard to know how you know, how much of a huge threat that is. It was, you know, and certainly, look, I mean, we did the story the other day about Freddie Freeman, and the headline says he's praying for his life. And then you read the article, and he's like, yeah, I said a little prayer. But it was 104 degrees. The next day it was 101, and then within 2 days it broke, and he felt fine. So it just... You don't know where to go for the information, and, you know, you hear these stories about, you know, this guy or that guy, but, you know, is that enough to be like a serious threat? And, you know, there's just so much stuff out there. It's this is so difficult, man. It's really, now I sound like I'm whining about it, but man, you know, you just don't know where to go to get the right information. You don't know exactly what the threat is, you know, and that's the thing. We need information, and hopefully that will come out of some of these things, like some of the steps that the Seahawks are taking, you know, in the NFL. You know, maybe they'll find ways to say, hey, this is our best practice here, and this is what you can do to, you know, minimize it, and something good will come out of it.
All right, let's take two.
It's time to take two. Brought to you by Infinity of Tacoma at 5.
Take two.
Seattle broadcasting legend Pat O'Day has passed away. His family announced that he died peacefully at his home in the San Juan Islands yesterday.
Yeah, a legend in the business, to say the very least. And I didn't know Pat O'Day. I had spoken to him a few times. He'd come into the building. We'd see him fairly often for a while. He'd be cutting different commercials and things like that. So you'd run into him. Always incredibly friendly. And, you know, Groz used to tell stories about him, you know, his interactions with Jimi Hendrix and all the, you know, just really, really cool stories about the guy. And by everybody's account, and Jim, I think maybe you knew him a little bit, just a quality individual.
Yeah, I'll tell you. When I heard that news today, I just I've been sad all day. If you grew up in Seattle like I did, and if you're around my age or in your 50s, you remember Pat O'Day. He was at KJR when they were playing top 40 music, and then he was a Hydro legend too. He was always out there, and boy, it was Seafair because of Pat O'Day. And I got to know him probably in the last 15 or 20 years. I played in his charity golf tournament up there in Friday Harbor, and he was just such a great host. He was so good to me, and I love that man. I just love Pat, and I just, you know, my condolences to his family, to his wife Stephanie, his daughter Kelsey, his other kids, and I just, man, it's a sad day in Seattle.
Yeah, sure is. What a nice man. I'm with you, Bob. I just kind of met him. He always made you feel like $1 million.
Yeah.
And always had time to chat with you and talk with you. But, yeah, you're right, Jim. I mean, going back, I mean, he's absolute, as far as radio media goes, just a legend here in Seattle.
The Mariners lost 5-3 to the Angels yesterday. Justin Dunn had a rough start, giving up home runs to Trout and Pujols and needing 37 pitches to get out of the first inning, but he was able to recover a bit and stay in through the fourth without allowing any more runs.
That was the upside. I mean, he's an example of what we're going to see, uneven performances. You're going to see some good, you're going to see some bad. You saw it got bad quick. 37 pitches, as Morris said, to get out of that first inning, but he did settle down. So there's something you can take away from that, and you know, I think we're going to see it. Just inconsistency will probably be the biggest word we use when looking at some of the young players on this team. We'll talk more about that coming up.
Yep. You know, he's one of these. Hopefully he learns from this, right? And that's what I'm excited to see Sheffield's next outing, just because of how he looked briefly there. But for these guys, they're just going through the growing pains here. And, you know, Justin Dunn, such a quality guy. You know, I think emotionally and intellectually he's going to handle it fine.
Yeah, and Kyle Lewis, though, but boy, he was fun to watch last night. So he's got another hitting streak going. It ended at 10 games, and then he hit one off the wall last night, and they took a home run away from Jason Castro with a nice leap there at center field. So, and Dylan Moore looks really good, doesn't he? He's back in the lineup tonight, so we'll see. We've got Marco on the mound. Maybe they can get it turned around tonight.
All right, speaking of the Mariners, Evan White is struggling offensively. He looks a little overmatched, starting to appear a little frustrated. Should there be any concern about damaging his confidence if this continues? We'll talk about that next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
We got the professor coming up at the top of the hour to talk some football with us. Stay tuned for that. A reminder, you do have radios in your homes. If you've got a smart speaker, Alexa, Google, whatever you've got there, just tell it to play 710 ESPN Seattle or 710 AM. It becomes a radio right there for you. We were just talking about the Mariners, and one guy that obviously has caught everybody's attention for two different reasons is Evan White. First reason is defensively, he's a stud. He has lived up to the billing, maybe even exceeded it. He looks remarkably comfortable. He makes everything look easy. And tough plays that we've seen other first basemen propped up there struggle with, not make the plays. He's a stud defensively. I don't think there's any debate about that. Offensively, he's in a hole, in a big one. And I know the season is young, but it's only a 60-game season. He's 0 for his last 17, I believe, or 0 for his last 14, 1 for his last 27. He's hitting 114. So I'm looking at that going, okay, I know we've debated here about, you know, why are baseball players so soft? And what do you mean they break if you leave them in there to get, you know, go through these struggles? Yet there are guys that you could point to and say, yeah, maybe they brought them up too soon and it impacted their development, whether you're talking Zunino or Ackley or Smoke initially or any of these guys. So whether that's true or not, we can put that as a separate discussion, but let's assume it is true to an extent for whatever reason. Do you worry about Evan White? Do you worry about his confidence in him? Because he does look a bit overmatched, to say the very least. And Scott Servais, after the game, acknowledged that he looks to be a bit frustrated.
Oh, any player would. You know, you're trying to get things going, and you have a quality at bat. You hit the ball pretty hard. And they did make some very good defensive plays against us tonight, both Renjifo and Fletcher there late in the game. But you got to just keep grinding it out. That's the nature of this game, and it will turn. But it's the quality at bats, keep making good swing decisions, and it'll turn. It'll turn in his favor.
So what do you think? Is there any reason to – I'm not overly concerned, but in the back of my head I'm thinking, all right, I wonder if Scott maybe should, you know, have him sit for a game or two and just, you know, work on some things in the batting cage, sit back and watch, maybe catch his breath. I mean, he's never had an at-bat above Double-A. I heard Blowers on the broadcast last night being asked, you know, the jump from – Double A to Triple A, and the gap that he's saying, that's, it's massive, it's huge, and he went from Double A to the pros. So I understand the struggle. I just wonder if there should be any concern.
Yeah, you know, whenever you talk about his defensive attributes, Bob, I always think of your buddy Brendan Ryan.
Oh yeah,
I know you had a pretty good relationship with him. You'd always go talk to him. Just one of those go-to guys you could always get something out of. But you know, I'm looking at his batting average, you know, 229, 167 one year.
He had like one good year with the Cardinals where he hit like 290 or something like that.
292, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I'm just looking at his numbers right now. But, yeah, he was under 200 four or five years. But, yeah, I feel like, you know, you asked the question, is it time to get concerned? Not this year. I don't think. Not this year. And as long as he's playing, you know, good defense right now, you know, but it's up to Servais. The one thing he said about, you know, it's not so much about, well, it is about their confidence, but he said, you know, you kind of want to go in the same direction the whole year. You don't want to be going up and down and up and down. And, you know, so that's I think, maybe the most important part of it. But he seems like a good guy. I've heard him interviewed, you know, seems like he doesn't have that scared look, Jim, that, who was the guy that always looked
Ackley.
Sad up at the plate? Yeah, Dustin Ackley. Yeah, I mean, he seems like he's got some confidence. So I guess, you know, I would just say this year. But it's up, you know, obviously Servais knows him and we don't. You got to know your players. But it's not anything that overly concerns me right now.
Yeah, I'd say that I'm moderately concerned. I wouldn't say under concerned or overly concerned. I watch him and man, I just feel bad for him. And then when you're in a slump like he is, nothing seems to go the right way for you. He hit the ball hard last night. It was a two-strike count. I can't remember how many balls that he had in that count. But the second baseman just ranged to his left and, you know, made a nice play on a hard-hit ground ball. So he needs some breaks here and there. But, yeah, I'm with you, Bob. When I watch Evan White come up, I sit there and I hope. I'm going, oh, come on, kid, you can do it. The Mariners have showed a lot of faith in him already. They gave him that six-year, $24 million contract just playing at Double-A. He'd never been in the major leagues, so it was a leap of faith by the Mariners. And I thought at the time, I thought, man, I think it's it's a risky deal for Evan White, too, because he might be leaving a lot of money on the table. All the projections you heard about him, you knew about his great defense over there, and he projected well as a hitter, and he probably still does. We're just talking about 12 games here. But, man, oh, man, the last six or seven games watching Evan White in the batter's box, a lot of swings and misses. He struck out 20 times.
Yeah, just, again, the word that just comes to overmatch. Maybe he's guessing a bit. Maybe he's pressing. And, you know, this is the one sport where you can't try harder at the plate. And when you do try harder, it creates more issues than it does solving problems. So there's, you know, you hear that from these guys over the years just about going up there with a plan, going up there relaxed and just sort of a comfort and a confidence in what you're doing up there versus, man, I'm going to hit this ball so hard. I'm gripping this bat so tight, and I got to hit this ball. Oh, dang it. I missed that one. You know, and you can get up into your own head. And that's kind of what, you know, Ryan Roland Smith said to us yesterday, that he believes his struggles are in his head.
Evan White, we saw last that bat against Trevino, just straight fastball, middle in, and just overmatched. And does he have the ability to hit that pitch? Absolutely. But it's just, I think that's just more of a mindset that on the on-deck circle, having that belief, And not having that pressure on yourself being a young player, because everyone expects so much. And even if you do well, people expect you to keep it up. It's not a situation where the league has said, oh, we know how to pitch this guy. That's more him. That's him. That's Evan White versus Evan White in his head.
So this is where you get a chance to see mentally what they're made of. I mean, there's no doubt about his skills, his ability, what he possesses. They made that investment because of those skills and what he can do. And you're seeing it on the defensive side. And maybe it is just a struggle like any young player would have. You just wonder, all right, at what point do you say, let's just give him a break for a day or two?
Yeah. You know, Dave mentioned Brendan Ryan. Brendan Ryan was fantastic at short, and we've seen the same kind of defense from Evan White over at first base. The only difference is you can get, well, historically anyway, you could get away with a good fielding, bad hitting shortstop because it was such a key position. But at first base, you need some hitting numbers from that position. And so as good as Evan White is with run prevention and helping out his infielders on some errant throws, he's got to get that bat going and to justify the contract too.
All right, coming up, an alter ego of Russell Wilson that we all saw a couple of years ago, for some reason, has made its way out in the public again and people responding in a negative way. We'll talk about it next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Coming up at the top of the hour, the professor John Clayton will join us on the program. If you guys have football questions for John, you can text those into 710-710, the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. Meanwhile, this Russell Wilson video of him and, you know, identifying his alter ego that we saw 2 years ago, for some reason, has made its way back out into the social media universe, and people responding to it as if it's fresh and brand new. And for people that don't remember, here's a little snippet of Russell Wilson talking about his alter ego he calls Mr. Unlimited.
Hey, guys. Russell here. Yes, the typical boring, yes, Russell, the robot Russell, the one you guys love to know. Real exciting. You know, I'm real exciting. But anyways, everybody has to have an alter ego, right? And I've been thinking about what my alter ego would be. And I think I have an alter ego. His name's Mr. Unlimited. Yeah, you got to be unlimited. You know, you got to have a thought process of being unlimited. So when people ask you, you know, what you're thinking about or what you want to do in life or where you want to go, you got to be unlimited. Tell them, I'm unlimited.
It goes on from there.
Oh, it does, for about another 30, 40 seconds where you're just going, Russell. I love Russell so much. He's so goofy. He's so corny, and he's having fun.
Do you love him that much?
I do love him, but I just watched it during the break because I hadn't seen it in 2 years, and I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. That's what he did, didn't he?
That was 2018.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm not even sure. Do we know how this became a thing? All of a sudden, people responding to it. Mina Kimes tweeted out, some personal news. I have seen the Mr. Unlimited video. Please respect my privacy during this difficult time. Our buddy Jeff Schwartz tweeted, cringeworthy. So, yeah. I don't know. I mean, it's kind of funny, but it is cheesy. I don't know. I'm not sure what to say about it. I'm just more confused why it's a thing 2 years after the fact.
Yeah, well, I love Russ. I love all of it, and especially Corny Russ. Corny Russ is great. And what made it so good and part of what he's all about is last year when after he got his deal, when Tyler Lockett and DJ Fluker did the thing in bed,
yeah,
about how they were under the blanket, and they were giving Russ a hard time about that. You know, I mean, if Russ was this disconnected guy from the rest of the team, and you know, we always talk about how, you know, quarterbacks are sort of like coaches and sort of like management. They're on a different level, but you can tell that those guys think, you know, he's one of the guys. So I love it. I think Russ is great. And I just think it showed a lot of confidence. I mean, he knows it's corny, I'm sure, but doesn't care. And that's just part of him. But yeah, I don't think Russ has ever said anything that has bothered me, or even when he was, you know, in doing the robot stuff, as he calls himself out in that video there, you know, robot Russ or whatever. You know, I just think that's a person that truly has confidence in himself, and he should. Yeah, he's fantastic, but yeah, I don't think it's cringeworthy or anything like that. It makes me laugh.
Yes, it is, Dave. Come on.
No.
Really?
That's just who
he
is.
I was just going to ask, which is more cringeworthy, the Seattle, I got a deal in his bedroom with Sierra?
Oh, it's not close. It's this one.
You don't think it's close?
I don't think it's even close.
I think it's a photo finish. I mean,
no way.
Who in their right mind says, you know what, after I get this $35 million deal, I'm going to go on social media from my bedroom with my wife and announce it? Who thinks like that?
Yeah, I mean, but just what he's saying in the video versus what he's saying in this. Now, that one was funny because all of a sudden he had just had a whole different tone to his voice. He was, yo, Seattle, we got a deal. And I was like, wait a minute, who is that? What voice is that you're using, Russ? But this one, as you said, Jim, it goes. We only played 30 plus seconds of it. It goes on for over a minute, and he's got, I think it's Sierra in the background saying, "Who's your role model, Russ?" He's going, "Mr. Unlimited. Who do you look to for advice, Russ?" Mr. Unlimited. You know, it's like,
Jim. Jim, you're laughing. We're laughing.
What I think is funny, because, you know, Dave is supporting Russell Wilson. Hey, Bob, can you imagine if I'd come out with videos like those? What would he be saying?
What would who be saying?
Dave.
What would all of us be saying?
If I came out with some video that said, hey, everybody, Jim Moore, I'm Mr. Unlimited.
No, you'd be going,
like, oh, shut up.
Your alter ego is the go-to guy. That's your alter ego.
What's more cringeworthy, Bob, that or me referring to myself in the third person?
Oh, boy. Well, he's kind of going third person. He's going alter ego third person, right?
So what would Jim do? Jim's thing would be like he would all of a sudden start using $25 words right and left.
I don't know very many of them.
Puerile.
I had a hard time yesterday with puerile with Michael Bradley yesterday.
Yeah, we'd have to learn some from Michael because I don't know him either. So it's just, yeah, this one was the cap or the video of the announcing the deal. I just sort of marveled at his tone. He just all of a sudden sounded like a different person. Just, you know, he just kept going. He kept going, and Sierra's throwing questions at him. Who do you get your info from, or who's your inspiration? Mr. Unlimited. He just kept doing it. And you're just like going, oh boy, okay. It was rough.
I guess I can kind of relate to him because, you know, I was never big on, you know, like I went to these NFL golf tournaments where it was me and Cortez 1 year and me and Paul Scanzi another year. And then there was two players from every team. And I don't know, there were some guys that just had, you know, like Randall Cunningham, he just had this air about him. You know, Dan Marino was kind of quiet, you know, and then, you know, there are always those guys that were trying to be somebody and be something that they're not. And I never could do that. That's what I appreciate about Russell, is that, you know, he just is being himself. I don't think he's I never see him try to be something that he's not. I think that we're just finding out you know, over a long period of time, what he's really about.
Yeah. He's clearly comfortable. He's got a different level of comfort, which I love.
Right. That's a good way to put it, Bob. Yeah, he's comfortable with himself in his own skin. And also, you know, who cares? I mean, if you're him, you're like, you know, I'm married to the most beautiful, nicest woman that, you know, anyone's ever met. I'm making, you know, millions of dollars playing a great game. He's got a family. I mean, I just think it's the fact that he's willing to kind of, it's almost like he's taking a shot at himself.
Yeah.
That's kind of how that comes off to me. So I love it.
Maura had a dangerous note on here. She says, what would your alter ego be named? You can ask texters to submit names for you guys. I think that's, that could be problematic. Jim's already gotten a couple suggestions on the text line, by the way.
Oh, really?
Hey, Bob, calling him names? Can you play that impression of Colin Coward? I got a kick out of that guy. Is that a guy that works with Frank Caliendo? Is it Joey
Molinaro? I'm not sure who he is, but yeah, here you go.
Russell Wilson, he did a little wacky, a little funny video where he was talking about his alter ego. His alter ego, he said, is Mr. Unlimited. I think it's spot on. Russell Wilson is Mr. Unlimited, as in unlimited on the field, unlimited possibilities in the locker room, unlimited possibilities as a franchise. Perfectly fitting for a guy like Russell Wilson. Baker Mayfield, he would be the alter ego of that alter ego, Mr. Limited. That's Baker Mayfield. Russell Wilson, unlimited, both in his alter ego and in possibilities on the field.
I don't know.
Like that?
I like
the effort there.
I can appreciate
the. He had the tempo down and everything, but he didn't. The voice was too.
Yeah, a little squeaky.
It was off. Yeah,
it was a little squeaky, but I can respect the effort. I certainly respect that. All right, coming up, if you've got football questions for the professor, text them in right now, 710-710 to the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. See what he thinks of Mr. Unlimited. John Clayton will join us next year with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.